Hi, I'm New York Mike, and you're listening to Roll Right Radio. Roll Right Radio, and we are rolling right. Today is Thursday, May 27th, and today we're going to be rolling into Washington, D.C. That's right. Right now we're in Montgomery County, Maryland. We got there last night. Let me tell you about the trip, about the ride, what's going on. What's going on with Roll Right Radio? I think I missed Tuesday's broadcast. Yeah, this ride has been amazing. Let me bring you up to date. It's been kind of exciting. You know, it's my 38th year of riding to the wall on Memorial Day, and I just had breakfast with Mark Navat, my buddy that I'm riding with. Mark was a Air Force combat controller with extensive combat experience in around the world, and just a great guy. And we've been riding, and you get a chance to ride. You know, you spend hours on the road, and then you just get those moments, that half an hour here and an hour there. You just get to talk, because I think that one of the things about riding is it provokes thoughts. You know, we have radios now and GPS and all this stuff, but the bottom line, you're on that motorcycle. You're kind of part of the environment as you roll through the countryside, and you kind of feel for the different places. When you ride through Colorado and ride through the mountains, it's definitely different than when you ride through places like Chicago. You know, you could sense it. You get a feel for that. And then sooner or later, I don't care, you can't be consumed with, you know, the radio or whatever for the whole time. At some point you hear that engine, you get that sound that just, and it kind of gets you mesmerized, and you thought, you're still aware of everything around you. You ride the motorcycle, for crying out loud. So, you know, you got to be totally focused on the ride, don't get me wrong, but somehow it also not just enables, but it almost provokes this thought. And I've always found that. And one of the reasons why, when I ride to the wall, I find it so important. And then just talking to Mark about it, we just had this discussion. And, you know, Mark does a lot for veterans. Mark does a lot to help, you know, guys transition, as he was talking about transitioning when you know coming out of the military and going into civilian life. I mean, he went through that. So, you know, there were years that he was, you know, out there looking for where he was going. And so he does those things. And I said, you know, in thinking about it, I like the fact that, you know, I could do this or this. But for me, it's this wall, because this wall means more than my life as a Vietnam vet, and I think it means something. And it's so important that, you know, Rolling to Remember. When Rolling Thunder started, and I said this, it was like 1988, and I don't know when I got something in the mail, because I was there for the dedication of the wall in November of 82, and then I rode down it in May, you know, Memorial Day of 83, and then every, you know, 84, 5, 6, 7. And, you know, obviously it grew. The motorcycle presence got bigger and bigger and bigger. I don't know if it ever got over 5,000 or more until, you know, Artie Muller, you know, I get the letter from Artie, and I think there were two other guys who signed it. I'm remiss in not remembering their names. I think Walt Sides was one of them. And so I got this letter, and I go, why? Why does everybody got to commercialize everything? Why does it got to be, you know, it's been so, you know, spontaneous, grassroots. We go down there, we go to the wall. You know, we honor our dead. We honor those who gave their lives. And it's we're doing this. Why do we have to have? And I was upset, and I got down there, and you know, I think the fact that it made a statement, it was a unified. I don't know how to describe it, but something happened to make it the rolling thunder that it was, and it that statement was more organized and louder, and it said, you know, not just are you going to help us honor our dead, but there are POWs and MIAs that we left in Vietnam, and you're going to listen to us. We're telling you, go back there, get those POWs, bring them home. That was a message no one had ever heard before. And so Rolling Thunder was a loud voice in something that wasn't even whispered before, because I don't think anybody ever talked about the fact. I know as a kid, my dad, who was a veteran, went to the VFWs and went to this and did that and everything else. They never talked about bringing their POWs home. They never talked about the missing. I don't remember. And it's something that was never conscious. And as we, Vietnam vets, through the voice of Rolling Thunder, were talking about missing. And I remember people coming and questioning me back then. Are you kidding, Mike? You really think there's live POWs in Vietnam? I said, not only in Vietnam. I think some were sent to China and some were sent to Russia. Yeah, I believe that. And you know, I'm going to do everything I can. And everything I could do was through Rolling Thunder. It was an organization that you were able to say, hey, if I agree with that, then that organization is, you know, I'm going to support their efforts, because me as an individual, we're only one person. But when we join together with the thousands and thousands, that's something that can be done. And Rolling Thunder over the years did some wonderful things, not just to expose the fact that we had POWs who were still probably alive in Vietnam, and POWs and they were missing that needed to be accounted for. But then they uncovered the fact that there was over 8,000 still missing from the Korean War. And then 80,000 still missing and unaccounted for from World War II. So this organization that I was like, my God, why? Became something that was so important. And then every year to be in Washington, this loud voice that got louder and louder and louder of Vietnam vets. Because there was, our generation was not a generation of, you know, the World War II. We weren't, nobody's calling our generation the greatest generation. Because our generation was only together, or whatever the word is. They only got together and organized for one thing, and that's, you know, hell no, I won't go to not support the war effort in any way, shape, or form. They let's, you know, get out of Vietnam, get out of the war. And not only were they loud about that, but, you know, they condemned us individually, the warrior, as well, because in order to rationalize that them burning their draft cards or moving to Canada was the right thing, they had to say that the opposite, actually going in, even if you were drafted or you joined, was the wrong thing. And they set out to prove that. And you know, and everybody that supported that whole side of our generation, which was the vast majority of Americans in our day, you know, everybody that supported the same thing, making us wrong for being there, making us wrong for what we were doing. And we weren't wrong. We were right. We were right in trying to save those South Vietnamese people. as soldiers, we were doing our job, and we did a good job, a great job. We won that war on the ground. They would not let us win the war. And the media, you know, Donald Trump pointed out all this fake news, fake news, fake news. But the fake news was there. The fake news never reported how important it was to what we were doing in South Vietnam, our wins, the victories for the people of South Vietnam, the defeat of the North Vietnamese. They never reported. Did they know? That's their job. Their job is war correspondents and reporters. It's to uncover the truth. It's not to support what, you know, your side. It's not to support, oh yeah, let's get out of Vietnam. What are we doing here? Why are we? No, you got to uncover the truth. The truth of the fact of the matter is that the Tet Offensive of 1968 was a disaster for the North Vietnam. A disaster. It was a victory for us. And so when, you know, the reporters said, oh my God, they're winning, they're killing. Where's the truth to that? What did the media do? What did our journalists do to report the truth? They didn't. They just reported something that substantiated their opinion about whether we should or shouldn't be there. And most of it, for the vast majority, was we shouldn't be there. And most of that was pointed out to, but the reason why we're there, look, you know, Kennedy said it was the domino theory, as each, we don't want these nations to fall to communism. It'll overwhelm the globe. That was the domino theory. But there was other things going on. And the fact that Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam were being run by tyrants who were just murdering and, you know, just killing these people. So, you know, I don't want to get into the details. At some point, you know, in life, if I have time to write that book, I might, you know, spend a little more time detailing the horrors that these people were put through. And the horrors that they, you know, put through all these years, that as we abandoned that war, just turned our back on them, especially in 1975, after 1972, at the Paris Peace Corps, the Round Table, we agreed to keep funding the South Vietnamese in their fight against being taken over by the North, and then in 75, when there was no more Nixon and President Ford didn't have, you know, any support in Congress, they said, no, we're cutting off all our aid. And that was the end of it. And that was the fall of Saigon and the fall of South Vietnam. And I don't know what year Pol Pot, you know, just killed as many of his Cambodians, but over the years, millions. That was the result of my generation. Yeah, my generation going in there and saying, we didn't do that in World War II, because World War II, you know, lasted, what, for us, 41 to 45. This was 1959 to 1975, so we're talking 16 years. It wasn't like there was a unified effort in this country to win the war. And there's a message here. There's a message that has got to be put by us, those veterans who served. And that message was we were enabled in 1982, when that wall was dedicated. It enabled us to have a platform from which to speak. That platform, those 58,000 dead soldiers, American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, they not only died and sacrificed for this country, they also gave us, their fellow veterans, a platform from which to speak and to talk about our story. It was wrong that we were called baby killers, and we were called names, that we were shunned. It was wrong. And that the wall, when that wall was dedicated, that wall was put together from the efforts of Jan Scruggs. One guy. Now, yeah, he had a committee and there were people involved. Yes, I don't want to take away from anything that other people did to help. But Jan Scruggs, he was the force. He was the power. He was basically a one-man army, a wounded veteran of Vietnam, an army veteran who just said, enough. And he persevered and said, we have to have something to honor those who sacrificed. And boy, I don't know what his comprehensive thought process was, but did he do something that just changed our lives? And I think should change the lives of Americans, because if America just dwelled in the reality that, we should have gotten out of the war and we were wrong to be there and I was wrong to fight there and, the right thing to do was to burn your draft card or go to Canada, that was the message. And that was the message supported by the country. That was the message that was given out. That was the message that I heard in the music of the 60s and 70s. Those were the songs that were sung. That was Bruce Springsteen, singing, born in the USA, go down and kill the yellow man. What? Yeah, that's the message. And so this wall gave us an opportunity to talk back, a platform to say, no. We didn't go to kill the yellow man. We went to save the yellow man, you stupid son of a bitch. This is our platform. And that's why it's so important to me, for me, that I roll to Washington, D.C. every Memorial Day. Because sooner or later, that it's, after a year or 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, now it's 38 years. There's a consistency. And I am, and that's why I am so grateful. I was so devastated when Rolling Thunder said that was it, the last year. We're not going to fight the fight with the Pentagon and the Washington police, and this is just too big a task to continue or whatever. And it was devastating to me, and still is when I think back on it. But then the AMVETs just stepped right up, because I think some things are meant to be. And, without getting, all religious and crazy and everything else, as spiritual as I am, and I am. I believe God has a purpose for us. And I think that, things happen for a reason. And so Rolling Thunder said, we're gonna go celebrate in, different cities in New Jersey and Indiana and Ohio. Okay, God bless you. That's good. And I know all the reasons. But to abandon Washington, well, the AMVETs came in and said, no, we're going to, and then they can't call it Rolling Thunder because Rolling Thunder is Rolling Thunder, and whatever the political infighting was, I have no idea. But they can't call it, so they call it Rolling to Remember. Rolling to Remember is now what it is. It's not the name. It's what brings together veterans. I know that, us as Vietnam veterans, it's important for us to make this statement, but for every veteran, we need to let every veteran know that the highest calling is that of military service. You're defending your country, you're defending your people, your family. That's the highest calling. And there was the lowest point in American history for those of anyone who served was, I don't know how Confederate soldiers were treated after the Civil War. I'm sure they were, if they went up to Pennsylvania or New York, they probably weren't treated too good. But I don't know who could paint a picture of how we were treated as Vietnam vets when we came back. We were shunned, shunned, literally shunned by society, and worse. We would deal with it. People talk about criminals today in kinder terms than veterans in the 70s. We were worse. We were lowlifes. And for all that, the message to America's youth today is, no matter what those circumstances were, there's no question that the highest calling of patriotism, the highest calling of an American citizen, is that of the service member, of the military, Army, Air Force, Coast Guard, Marines. That's the highest calling, and we're going to honor those. We're going to honor the ones that were thrown under the bus, that was talked about. We're going to honor the ones who were shunned. Honor the ones who were. That was not just us, but those 58,000 names on the wall. Every one of those, we're going to celebrate them for the heroes each and every one of them are. Every one of them were and are heroes to the American dream, to what this country stands for. For our ability and our desire to form a more perfect union every single day. That's what America is about, forming a more perfect union, getting better every day, being freer every day. That's our job. And, you know, sometimes you're on a mission, you go forward, sometimes you fall back a little bit. And so, you know, we just keep up, but that's the mission. That's the goal. And that's where we're going. And people need to know. At the lowest point ever that I can remember in our lifetimes, in my memory, we were still, those of us who served, were still the highest level of American citizen that there could be. And it's our job to make sure that's understood, not just by, you know, the youth of today, by the families, the fallen. Those Gold Star families need to know, and it needs to be reinforced constantly, that their children, their parent, their husband, died a hero to America. They didn't die in a jungle in Vietnam in an ignominious way that, you know, they shouldn't have been there, or they were fools to be there. No! Let's set that aside and raise up the idea that was the hero of our generation. Those were the heroes of our generation. Those who went and served. So that's the reason. I know that was a long description, and I've said it before, and I'll probably say it again. I think it's important. I think it's really important. And you know, that we're right now, we're 50 miles from Washington. It's been a great ride. The weather's been great. It's been phenomenal. There's been some interesting, I don't know, blips on the way. You know, so Navat comes, he came from Tacoma, Washington, and met me in the Grand Junction, Colorado. And so we met in Grand Junction last Friday. Wow. It's okay. Tomorrow will be a week. And then Saturday we rode to Kansas and met, Clint Randolph, a retired B-1 bomber. He was also a combat controller and a retired B-1 bomber pilot. What a guy, man. And we met him in Salina, Kansas, and we had lunch. We had a nice time. It was great. And so that had to be Saturday. I'm losing track. So we left the next day. We left Clint and rode to Topeka, where we stayed, and left to, I'm trying to remember where, the, yeah, so when we left, when were we in Colorado? Man, it's hard. When we left Grand Junction and we go through the mountains and then you get down to Denver, and from Denver, that's right, before we got to Colby, Kansas. Man, I'm just, I should have been doing this podcast on a regular basis, because after 4 or 5 days, you kind of, it gets lost. So it was, this is the interesting part. Here we get to, we're coming down the mountain, we get down to Denver. And by the way, it was great, because I ride through these mountains every year, because I'd rather go on the 70 through the mountains. It's the most direct, and it's scenic, and it's just a, I think it's the best ride. But the weather is crazy. You can get into snowstorms. It can go down into the low 30s. It's crazy. You know, rain, everything. So when you go through it and you kind of miss the bad stuff, all you get is this nice windy road through the Colorado mountains. It's just beautiful riding. And the day was great. We left Grand Junction. It's about 250 miles. To get from Grand Junction to Denver, and it's all mountains, and it's again, it's just beautiful. And so riding through, and then you get to a point where you, oh my God, it's going to rain, or it's going to get colder, and it never got bad. It, you know, it got okay. It got down to 42 degrees. That's great. That's great. And then you feel a little bit of rain, no snow, no sleet, just a little bit of rain, just enough to, you know, get you like, oh man, I should have put my rain gear on, which I didn't. So we get down to Denver, and then we keep going. From Denver, I don't know how many miles it is. You got to be on the 70, and you stay on the 70, and you get to Lyman. And that's probably 50, 60 miles out of Denver. And it's the last place to go. You know, you got to watch your gas. You get gas. We got about 180, 200 miles to a tank. So Lyman was, after Lyman, it's about 150 miles, if I remember right, to Colby, Kansas, where we stayed the night. So we got gas. We get off to get gas. And the weather's horrible, horrible. Once we got past Denver, the rain started coming, and it got dark. You know, now the skies get a little dark. It was still, you know, it was like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, but it was getting dark. And we pull over under an overpass, because I'm like, okay, wait a minute. This is getting serious. I mean, it got really bad. And we pull over to put our rain gear on. So, you know, pull the bike on the side of the road. I'm putting my rain gear on. Mark is behind me. And I hear, you know, there's thunder and lightning all over the place. And I hear this big crash. Sounds like a thunderclap. Boom! And I, you know, okay. And I'm putting my rain gear on. I hear Mark yelling. And I go, what's going on? And I look up. A car, a white sports car, had been coming down on the 70, hit some water, and just careened into the side and just crashed on the other side of the freeway, but just right across from where Mark was and where Mark and I were. He saw the whole thing, and I never saw any of it because I was so busy putting on my rain gear. I never looked up. So that was one crazy thing. And then from there, we get off in the town of Lyman, and there's like hundreds of motorcycles pulling off and pulling into the truck stop to get gas. So we go down the road, not to get in the middle of that. And we get to a little gas station, you know, just a football field away. And we get to this little gas station, and we fill up with gas, and we go inside, and we use the bathroom, we come out, and here come these guys running inside. These, you know, guys that just, what's going on, you know? And there were storm chasers. And with the thunder and the lightning and the rain, everything coming down, and there was these storm chasers saying, "This tornado's touching down. This tornado's touching down." It's and I look at Mark. I go, touching that one. They go 5 miles, and they run in, they get whatever they get, they run out, run into their Jeeps, and take off. They go, yeah, it's 5 miles south of here, it's going south. So we said, we're going north. They go, well, you better take cover. I said to Mark, and looks at me, and we go, let's get on our bikes and get out of here. So we just got on our bikes and just took off as fast as we could. And you know, we're going zoom 100 miles an hour down the road to beat these tornadoes. It turned out we got to Colby. Everything was great. The rain eventually, of course, it stopped. We put our rain gear on. Once we put our rain gear on, the rain didn't last another 15 minutes. Isn't that always the case? You know, take an umbrella, no worries. You don't have it, you're going to get soaked. It's the same thing. We put our rain gear on. So we get to Colby, and Mark goes to his computer and starts looking things up. 10 tornadoes touched down. The closest was 5 miles from where we were standing in Lyman. I think it's Lyman. But there were 10 of them, like within a 20 or 30 mile radius of where we were. It was crazy. But hey, that was cool. So the next day we leave Colby, and that's when we met with Clint, and then we went on to Topeka, and it's just been a nice ride, you know. The weather's been pretty good. I can't complain about it. You know, I mean, I do this every year. The last 13 years, I've been doing it with Robert Patrick, who Robert has been great. He's kind of on the ride with us. I mean, we're sitting in Enzo's in Grand Junction. Enzo's a great Italian restaurant. Been going to it for years and years. Enzo actually, you know, he rides a Harley. I at San Diego Harley 1 year, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, he walks up to me, and I look at him. I know this guy. I just don't know where it's Enzo. He rode in from Grand Junction, and he was in San Diego. So you know, and he goes to Sturgis every year. It's just a real cool thing. So we're sitting there in Enzo's, me and Mark, and Scott Lindsay, who owns Grand Junction Harley, and his girlfriend Julie, and Enzo. I think Enzo was there. Anyway, the phone rings. It's Robert Patrick. Hey, how'd you guys get? How's things going? it was great. So you know, we talked for a half an hour or so, and he's been on the phone with me every day, you know, talking about our progress, sending me maps. If I tell him, yeah, we're going to so and so, he'll send me a map with a link and give me a weather check, and it's just been really kind of cool. So this is the first year now when Robin and I ride. We, for some reason, don't even ask. Usually it's because, now that you have asked, it's because Robert has just gotten back from a USO tour to Afghanistan or Africa or Southeast Asia or someplace, which he goes every year. And he gets back and just before Memorial Day, so I'll meet him on a Monday. He leaves LA, I leave San Diego, we meet on the road. And we have to be there Thursday. That's today. So we meet on the road. We give ourselves 4 days to go almost 3,000 miles. Not real smart, but that's what we've done. So, you know, we're used to riding 600-700 mile days every day. Boom, 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 even more. So in some ways, this should have been kind of a vacation ride. But I don't know. It just, it hasn't been. I got to figure that one out. It's kind of weird. If we had set up to do 700 mile days, I guess we'd get up a little earlier, ride a little later, you know, spend a little less time when we stop, and it would be the same thing. So I'm not sure how it works, but it's all good, and here we are. Last night we stayed because we didn't have our room until tonight, and I like to stay downtown Washington because I can walk to the wall. Yeah, we've got Shelley's back room right across the street from the Marriott that we stay at, and I love Shelley's. I've been there all these years, 25 years or more, going to Shelley's. But it's also, you know, just a handful of blocks from the wall. I walk straight down Pennsylvania, the Constitution, and you go right to, what, 23rd, and there you are at the Vietnam Wall. And so I can't walk to the wall from Crystal City. Crystal City is where everything is staged from, because that's right across from the Pentagon. And, you know, it's all good and is all that, but I can't walk to the wall. And it's important for me to be able to do that. So that's why we stay where we stay. And believe me, I thought about it, because the hotels are a lot less expensive in Crystal City. And it's not a cheap ride. So here we are, and I'm gonna meet Mark downstairs in another half hour. Roll into Washington about 1 o'clock, getting in early, not getting your room, and all that doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's what we're doing. It's like I said, it's been a great ride. Politics, the news, everything's pretty much the same, you know. From my perspective, I'm listening to the same things, and you know, it's the next election that we need to focus on. It's we see what's going on. Everything we hear is just the denigration of the country. Look what's going on with the Wuhan thing. They're not going to investigate. They are going to investigate. Where did it come from? It came from China. It came from Wuhan, China. It came from those labs. And why aren't we investigating? Why aren't we in there? I think the answer is pretty clear and obvious, but you know, we can't accept this. It's got to be done. You know, and those of us who say Trump was right on COVID origins, without a doubt. He was right on the fact that the election was stolen, without a doubt. And you want to condemn me for having that opinion? No, you can't do that. No, that's my opinion. And, you know, I believe this election was stolen. So we've got to make sure that the next election isn't. That the next election is one, and it's coming up in 2022. Let's not wait. That's not, you know, it's not 24. It's not the presidency. Once we take back the House of Representatives and the Senate, we'll be able to guide the policy of the United States back to, you know, something that's patriotic, celebrates America. You know, America, what a great country. What a great, amazing country. Do we have flaws? Hell yeah, we have flaws. Yeah. Everyone has flaws. And as a people, we all do, of course. And is that what you need to focus on? You need to focus on America, the fact that, you know, we are a country built on an idea of freedom for the individual, and that freedom, you know, is right there in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, in the, you know, Declaration of Independence. That's where our freedom is, all in those documents. And when we let those documents be just denigrated, and you know, the Constitution, no, it doesn't change. It's there. It's established, the First Amendment, Second Amendment. I mean, it's just all there. And the truth is the truth. And the journalists need to be the truth seekers. They need to find the truth, not something that reinforces their opinions. That's not what journalism's about. This country was founded by journalists, you know, printers, people that, you know, that put out things that people read, and it was founded on those truths that, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Well, they're not so self-evident. It is for us as we see it, you know, is this guy Fauci? You know, is he just plain lying about what happened in Wuhan, that he didn't fund the Wuhan labs? I mean, is he just lying? Are we afraid to chase after the truth about China and what's going on? Why? Well, you know, I'm going to spend the next few minutes talking about something interesting. I saw on the news the other day that John Cena apologized to China. They made a big deal out of it. John Cena, who's, you know, this great wrestler, he's an actor, you know, I don't know what level of actor he is. I've seen some of his movies, and he's fun to watch. I also know that John Cena is a little more liberal than makes me comfortable, and that's, you know, that's his politics. That's, you know, where he is. Okay. I didn't ask him who he voted for. I don't know him enough to do that, and I wouldn't do it anyway. But he said something, and, you know, if you don't know who he is, he's a pretty well-known public dude. So he said something about Taiwan, the country of Taiwan, and China just went nuts. And, you know, they can't do it. They think Taiwan is part of China. And so it turns out, and something I didn't know, that John Cena has learned how to speak Mandarin. I have no idea why, but he speaks Mandarin. And he apologizes. I'm watching this on Fox. He apologizes for saying that Taiwan is a country in Mandarin. And he, oh man, people just came out and put him down. And I'm not going to defend him. I'm not. Well, I look at it and I go, look at the NBA, National Basketball. What have they done? You know, but apologize to China. Maybe not in Mandarin, but in their own way. What about Mark Zuckerberg? What about all these other big corporations? Honestly, I believe this whole election, I think was all, I think that whether it was, you know, real or fixed, I think it was mostly because the Trump derangement syndrome was because China, our biggest customer, you know, they're buying everything from us. They're also selling everything to us. I think their sales to us is bigger than their purchases from us, and all these companies, Apple, all the rest of them, they get everything in China. Everything's made in China, and their customers are all in China. So either way, they're going, get this guy Trump out of here. He's wrecking our relationships with China, and that's where our world sits. So they condemn John Cena for apologizing, and he shouldn't have apologized. That's my opinion. But, you know, I'm not going to condemn him. I don't know enough about, maybe in his words about you know, Taiwan, he used some nasty Chinese words. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. But I look at the whole picture and say, why is it that even the left will condemn John Cena, but they won't condemn Apple or Facebook or any of these other, you know, left-wing, you know, major organizations? They won't condemn the NBA. They won't condemn Hollywood. These people are all there for China. So I just thought it was interesting when I saw this whole thing on John Cena that comes down on one guy. Again, I'm not familiar enough with the incident, but it just seems to me that make a big deal about the National Basketball Association going into China about LeBron James. How much money does he make from China? How many of the billion and 600 million Chinese buy stuff from LeBron James? Is that why he won't say anything bad about China? Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. I wanted to throw some of those facts out. We'll be in Washington in an hour or two. Looking forward to it. And here we go. We're starting this weekend to celebrate the wall, the heroes that served this country in every war, the Gold Star families and family members who are still out there, from the family members from the USS Cole, from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, certainly all the family members from all of those who fought in Vietnam. I think there's probably some people that are still going to be there from Korea, World War II. It's going to be a big weekend. And again, I'm proud of the fact that the wall, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall, that black, virtually underground wall, is the symbol that everybody gathers around and focuses on for Rolling to Remember on Memorial Day in Washington, D.C. I'll be doing as many of these podcasts as I can from Washington and as soon as I leave. I hope you all have a great Memorial Day. Please remember, have a backyard barbecue and sit around with hot dogs and hamburgers and just remember and appreciate the Americans who gave their lives and gave so much. And going to war, and you come home, it's not just a matter of having given your life or giving life or limb or anything else. Serving is something that there's a cost to it. And if you're just going to focus on the cost without focusing on what you get from giving that service, and that needs to be reinforced to every member of our military, that their service has more meaning and has more benefit for this country, and will certainly, it's much larger than the cost. There is a cost. Everyone who serves, especially in time of war, everyone who serves pays a big price. It's a price only those who pay that price can know the price, okay? You can't understand it. But you need to let that service member know how much that's his or her service means to you, to the country, to your family. That's what Memorial Day is all about. So God bless you. God bless America. Have a great Memorial Day. I'll talk to you guys soon. This is Roll Right Radio. Roll Right Radio. I'm New York Mike. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for your kind words. We appreciate all the comments we can get. Roll Right Radio. Talk to you guys soon.